TFM.
Welcome back, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, just whatever you do, if you hear like sounds or even like a baby crying coming from your computer, please do not dig through the screen and tear the machine apart. I mean, we need that computer working all day today.
Chris, is that you? Is that you I hear? Carol? David? T'Pring? Anybody?
Oh my goodness, maybe even Garrick will show up.
Yeah, who knows? Quark? Why are you here?
The black cat from Cat's Paw.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're going to keep talking about some of those people and other things today as we continue through season 4 of Strange New Worlds with episode 2, The Griffin Incident. And here is a quick rundown of the story. After the Future Federation Leaders Retreat, Jim Kirk decides to hitch a ride home with fellow attendees Spock and La'an Noonien-Singh. But their sail back is nothing but smooth when they come across a long-lost Federation starship, the USS Griffin. Missing for almost a decade for unknown reasons, the Griffin seems to be haunted, and when their shuttle is destroyed, the trio finds themselves trapped in a house of horrors that plays on their innermost thoughts and fears. Thankfully, Pike and the Enterprise crew beam over to save them. Or do they? Oh, Matthew, I don't know if it's really them. I have to say, just off the bat, when they beamed in, Pike and the others from the Enterprise, in that very moment, did you think it was really them? Because I immediately thought, okay, that's not really them.
No. No. Not to like spoil anything about the conversation, but I think there's nothing. This is one of those episodes that absolutely zero things happen that are surprising, really. I think other than the gore factor, everything else story-wise, it's been done before.
Yeah, yeah. Like corpses sitting upright in sick bay and scaring the crap out of Beverly.
Exactly. Which, you know, is one of the things, right, where it is very clear that this episode is meant to save money by being a bottle show where yeah. we just have to mess up our sets, you know, so that we can save a lot of money because we're going to probably be spending tons of money in other episodes. And so therefore we need this one to be as cheap as possible, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Which has been done before. And this episode draws on a lot of past Star Trek stories. You see elements happening. I mentioned the corpses sitting up in night terrors. So there are lots of different things like that. The episode that this reminded me most of as we talk about the bottle show reusing existing sets is Impak Nor on Deep Space Nine.
And yes, yeah, yeah.
I went back and rewatched that episode after watching this one, and there are a lot more similarities between these two episodes than you even think there are when you just remember that, oh, there was that episode where they went to Impak Nor, which was basically a way for them to just use the sets from Terok Nor, which is Deep Space Nine, and tell another story and not have to, you know, spend a bunch of money on building sets and they can dim the lights and all that. But, you know, I have mixed feelings about this episode. I was telling you when we were texting about it after I watched it, it's not a bad episode. I think it's put together. There are no real surprises in terms of twists in the story, but overall, in terms of the production value and everything and the general concept of the episode, I think it's a pretty good episode. It's above average episode. The gore factor, which we'll talk about later, really starts to turn me off as the episode goes on. But I just bring this up that it's, I think, an above average story in that even though so many elements of the story are things that you recognize, like, oh, I remember when that happened on this series or when that happened on that series, it still all comes together in a way where they're able to tell a story where they're mainly focused on what's happening to three characters. And so I think it's okay, like, that they roll all this stuff up. Now, they do try to dip into canon a bit and kind of get themselves mixed up, I feel, a little bit when I'm viewing it, which we can also talk about, especially when we get to the Jim Kirk stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the show being a bottle show and kind of even just, as you were mentioning, with this, the creative vision behind this episode, feeling so much like Impact Noir, Night Terror's frame of mind. I mean, there are many episodes of Star Trek where we kind of create a horror type vibe, right? And mm-hmm. you know, Strange New Worlds last season and now continuing into this season liked to pick a genre or a trope and do an episode in that vein. And so this episode is, we're doing the horror vibe, right? And in mm-hmm. fact, we're doing it in a horror vibe that is very familiar with anybody who's seen any of the modern horror films, where it's kind of got this weird psychological bent to it as well. And so, like you mentioned, we've seen that in Star Trek before, and this one is trying to utilize that as a way to kind of mine some character depth. And whether or not that's successful, I think we can talk about as we, you know, talk about who they're trying to focus on and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, and this is probably the best thing I can say about the episode, is this. It utilizes this trope to actually trying to continue to tell stories for the characters themselves instead of just being off the wall and outrageous for outrageous right. sake, I think.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, yes, it's more of an episode that's kind of above average than it is, you know, a place where you took a wild swing and it's just like, this seems to have nothing to do with anything and, you know, it doesn't even work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think really it's going to kind of come down to, as we're talking about this, okay, what's the execution? You know, what's the mm-hmm. execution in the character development we're trying to do for these three main characters? And kind of what's the execution in bringing this creative vision to life? Like you mentioned, you know, whether it's ways in which we kind of harken back to other Star Trek series that have done this, you know, what we show, what we don't show. You know, Star Trek has always kind of been more about like leaving things to the imagination, that kind yeah. of getting really visually visceral. And so, again, I think it just kind of comes down to more, does the episode execute what it wants to do? And what this episode wants to do is character development with three characters.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the horror element of this, like dipping into that genre, you can go different ways with horror. And I don't like horror in general. I'm not a horror person. And I think, like,
I'm not either.
Whether people like this episode or not really depends in part on where they fall there, because there are people who really love this gory horror stuff. And if yep. you like that, I think they did it well here, but it's not for me. So as this episode goes on and on, like the first half of the episode, I'm kind of following the mystery, like what's going on, what's going on. And then it starts getting gorier and gorier. And you reach a point where I'm just like looking away from the screen. I don't want to see this stuff.
Yeah, same.
And I don't think that that is how you should tell a Star Trek story. I just don't think Star Trek is the vehicle for that type of storytelling. You don't need it. The way, look at The Next Generation, for example. There are some really creepy stories in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the way that TNG or DS9 or Voyager or Enterprise would have handled the material that's in this episode is, for example, T'Pring is going to cut the tips off of Spock's ears. They might show the scissors going towards the points of his ears, but then they would cut away, because you can imagine what's happening. You don't need to see the tips being cut off. You don't need to see puddles of green blood underneath his head. That's
you
just
don't need
not
to see Pike
necessary.
Cutting off his own fingers, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was just ridiculous. And you'll remember back in Picard, I got really upset in the episode Stardust City Rag, where they drill out each of the eye. For me, that's extremely disconcerting because I've had 5 eye surgeries on my left eye and 1 on my right eye, where I've spent 3 hours lying flat on a bed with the surgeon cutting up my eye with knives. And I don't want to see that. So I was really turned off in this episode by them going that extreme. So again, to Pring cutting off Spock, the tips of Spock's ears, that's fine for the story, but you just don't need to show it in grotesque detail. I think, an example of an episode where they do this sort of horror vibe, haunted house horror vibe very well would be something for me like Dead Stop in Enterprise, where they stop at the repair station that's so mysterious and all this weird stuff's going on and people are disappearing and you don't know what's happening, but it's not gory.
Right. Yeah. I think, yes, there is a definite difference between like gore and suspense and all that. And I think, you know, that to me, the psychological nature of this is the much more interesting aspect, the psychological horror kind of, very much akin to like a Hitchcockian story, you know, like in Vertigo or something like that would have been much more interesting here and much more fascinating to kind of go with this grotesque horror. And I'm right there with you. I personally don't like horror in that sense very much. You know, I do enjoy some things, you know, I've seen like The Shining or Dr. Sleep and some things like that, you know, some of the classic things like that.
Like, but I remember when I was growing up, I enjoyed watching Poltergeist, but I will not watch like Friday the 13th or those types of slasher type movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
I think the other part about this is that it wasn't really necessary for the story
the key,
that they're trying
to
tell. You know, I think, and I gotta look, I think maybe can we start with Spock and the character development there?
Sure. Okay. Because we've already been talking about his ears. So
yeah, exactly. I said that this episode comes down to execution. Mm-hmm. And I think Spock was actually the wrong person to have on this episode. And the reason is, and I know why they did it, right? Because Spock and La'an and Kirk create this weird triangle, love triangle thing, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that everything that we see Spock go through, he's already been through at least 3 times on this show with the whole thing about his Vulcan heritage, his human heritage, the clash in between. So it makes actually all of the things with Spock in the episode really boring because I have already seen Spock in this series multiple times kind of struggle through these issues. And so to see it one more time with him, one, I don't need it. And two, then yes, again, when they go to the nth degree in the gore factor with him, it's very unnecessary for me as well for this story. And so it just, it put a real sour note to the episode for me in that sense, where there's other aspects, I think, of this episode that work really well for other characters. But for Spock specifically, I hate to say it, but I just feel like he's a waste of time in this episode because this is thematic material that has been covered too many times on this show already.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a reason why they're covering it again. Remember last time our discussion of the opener, you know, I said that there are ways that you can write Spock's character to get him to where we know him later on in the timeline, but it's harder to do with some of the other characters. But I think we were talking about Scotty and Kirk at that point, but I think that's what they're doing. I think that part of this episode and probably part of what we're going to see throughout this season is an attempt by the writers to course correct knowing that they've only got, at this point now, they've got 8 more episodes this season and they've got 6 next season, and they want to end season 5, that final episode. Their finish line is Jim Kirk is in the captain's chair of the Enterprise. And,
sure,
you know, there was all that talk about, oh, maybe we can do a year one series where we're actually with the crew that we know from TOS. And so I think that what we saw in this episode is their attempt to do what I mentioned last time, which is we're going to get Spock to the logical Spock that we know from the original series, and we're going to mm-hmm. finally move him away from all this experimentation with his human side. And that was the reason why we have all this dialogue in this episode of sort of the reverse, right? Like T'Pring is saying, it's your Vulcan side. We got to like cut off the points and like set you free. And, but all that's actually inside Spock's head, right? She's not really there.
Right.
And so he's struggling with this, and they even have the little coda with Chapel, which I thought didn't make sense at this point of why would she be, she's basically like, why was it T'Pring that your mind conjured up and not me?
Right.
Right. Yeah. Which didn't really fit with the rest of the story that we had watched. I didn't think.
Yeah.
But what I will say about T'Pring being there, though, that I did appreciate in what they've done with the series is that they have used T'Pring enough on the series that it made perfect sense for her to be there. You didn't feel like, oh, T'Pring is coming out of the blue. And it also makes sense for Spock's character. Like, we know enough about their relationship that the fact that she's the one that shows up works. And there's even this moment, I said earlier, there aren't really any unexpected twists, but there is this tiny moment where you could wonder, is something bigger going on here? And is it the real T'Pring that has somehow materialized on this ship? Like, it's not completely incomprehensible like they sometimes do, where they just throw in a character that hasn't really been established enough to warrant them even being there.
Yeah, I do see what you're saying. I'll probably, you know, get on people's nerves, but I think it's a mistake to care at this point. To care about where the character ends up in canon and all that stuff. You mm-hmm. guys have already destroyed all of that. So just keep telling the story you're telling for Spock, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Which has been interesting. And it's in many ways, you know, it's akin to what you got in the J.J. Abrams universe, where, you know, we got to explore a different side of Spock, a different type of Spock. And to me, I think that has made this version of Spock more interesting than just trying to get him to where we've already seen what we've already mm-hmm. seen. You know, none yeah. of that's interesting, right? If you're going to do these characters at this point, having them free to be explored in different ways is much more interesting to me. And so, again, like, I totally get what you're saying, and you're probably right that in some ways that's what they want to do. But I just think it's a mistake, and it's a waste of the amount of space you have left in this series to be doing that type of stuff. And at the same time, if you're off by like a degree and you're trying to get somewhere, depending on how far you're going, you can be anywhere from like 2 miles to like hundreds of miles away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're hundreds and thousands of miles away from where they would need to be to have this show end up and actually be in line with where TOS is, right?
Yeah.
And so I just, again, I'm enjoying watching Spock say with La'an and their relationship and what that mm-hmm. means for both of them and all of that. And so I would have much rather us, I mean, even, I think it would have been more interesting even to dive in to somebody like Pike here and really kind of dig into where his psyche is at this moment. Whereas, like, is he still worried about the future? Is he, you know, I mean, obviously he's still dealing with the what happened there with Battelle. And like, I feel like there's a lot you could kind of dig into there and give us some real interesting insights into him as a character. You know, heck, I just make number one, Una, a much more interesting character. What are her fears? You know,
like, yeah, they don't make do her much a
fully rounded
her.
Character, you right. know? So again, all that to say, it's just, to me, it just doesn't work. But I think you're mm-hmm. probably absolutely right. I think that's probably what they're trying to do. And so,
yeah, I think it is what they're trying to do. But as you describe, it's like if you have a spaceship that you're like a probe that you're trying to insert into orbit around Mars or Venus or something. And, you know, if you fire the rockets a half second off, the whole trajectory is going to be off and the ship is just going to go off into deep space, right? It's kind of like that of trying to insert this series into canon and make it all line up with the original series as if you would then be able to do a year one series and all the characters mm-hmm. would naturally feel like we knew them before. Like, it's just not going to happen at this point. I mean, you mentioned Pike. They kind of raised that slightly when he's in there chopping his fingers up, where he's implying that, yeah, you know, I could stay here. I don't have to be the captain anymore. I don't have to worry about any of this. But that wasn't even him. So that makes you wonder, like, that had to be coming from Spock's mind because it was in
what
the same
he thinks about the
sick
captain.
Bay. Yeah, exactly. What he thinks about Pike. So it doesn't even matter. Which also, all the stuff with Sam. So if we switch over now to Kirk, this isn't where I wanted to start with Kirk, but it bridges to what we're saying with that's what Spock thinks about the captain. All the stuff we hear from Sam is what Jim thinks about his brother, because Sam isn't really there either. But unlike the Pike stuff, which is obviously not real, the Sam stuff does come off a lot like Sam might really be there. It's a lot less obvious that that's not Sam through most of those scenes. And I mentioned Jim at the beginning in my synopsis. Jim Kirk decides to hitch a ride home with fellow attendees. Now, that wording pretty much comes from his log entry. And it made me ask, where does Jim Kirk consider home right now? Because he's hitching a ride home with Spock and La'an. They're going to the Enterprise. I mean, they're at the Federation Leaders Retreat, so they're already in the Federation. So he's got to be going to somewhere he considers home. He's just, every chance he gets, he's there measuring the drapes on the Enterprise for when he's going to be the captain, right? How many ways can the writers figure out to get him on this ship?
Yeah. I mean, it is the, look, again, this is kind of the mistake of the show, I think, of trying to pretend like you're going to TOS. It's like, it's much more interesting if this show just allows this Kirk and his progression towards captaincy of the Enterprise to take a different track. Like, I just think it would even be much more interesting to have had him, you know, if we're not pretending to be a part of canon anymore, he could just be an officer on the Enterprise at this point, and allowing him to learn from Pike, I think would be really fascinating, to kind of use that as a mentorship relationship, I think would be fascinating.
Right.
And so, it is a very strange thing, because it's basically the answer in Insurrection for why Worf is on the Enterprise is a better answer than this. Exactly.
They try to explain it the first couple of times, and then it, by the end, it's like the
Mr.
conversation
Worf,
fades out.
What the hell
out.
Are you doing here?
Yeah. Well, I was cutscene.
I'm sorry, were you saying something, Worf? Did I catch a niner in there calling from a walkie-talkie? Oh, gosh.
But it is, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like that. Let me ask you this. I did feel this. I think part of it is I feel like they've changed his haircut a little bit, but I do feel like Paul Wesley is starting to embody the character of Kirk in a way that feels a little bit more like Kirk to me than it did the first few times we saw him. Do you feel that way?
I think he's fine. Like, I've never disliked him as Kirk. I think he's good. you know, I think he's fine. You know, the only other Kirk that I thought was really good was Pine. And that's because I really felt good. Like Pine just naturally has the same type of charisma.
Yeah, that he has the same charisma as Shatner. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But he was able to do that in his own way. And every once in a while, it almost felt like they were the same, but not in a way that ever felt like he was just doing a parody or something.
Right.
I think Paul Wesley's Kirk is fine. It's not really about his portrayal. And even, again, this is where it's just more interesting if I don't have to care about canon, because the idea of really watching this character struggle this way between being a father and with Carol and the difficulty of all that with David, you know, like right when we watch Star Trek II and Kirk says to her, I did what you wanted. I stayed away.
Mm-hmm.
This does not feel like a relationship that went sour, that they had bad feelings towards one another. It felt like a relationship where two people got together and they wanted completely different things in the end. And regardless of whether it was right or not, Kirk acquiesced to Carol and gave her what she desired and felt like, you know, even though I would heartily disagree in his decision, he felt like the most loving thing to do for her is to let her have what she wanted at the expense of, you know, what it did to his son. But it's so much more interesting for this just to be an exploration of Kirk really struggling of, you know, he wants to be in command one day, but he also has this sense of like, well, you know, I see my brother be able to have a successful family. How come I can't have that? And so I find all of those dilemmas really interesting for him. And this is where I think the like psychological nature of the episode and it not being grotesque really worked, right? Where because we're really kind of driving at what's plaguing his mind and having that just kind of rake over his mind like, you know, fingers on a chalkboard was exactly what the episode needed for the character development of Kirk in the sense of like having him wrestle, you know, out loud and physically in form where we can understand it other than just seeing what's kind of like being thought of in his brain as you would get like in a novel. So this is actually where I think, look, everybody knows I don't care about where this connects with canon. You know, apparently, he was a Boy Scout. So it can't be canon because Carol said there were many things that Jim Kirk was, but he was never a Boy Scout. That's a quote from Star Trek II. So, yeah, I mean, this Kirk was a Boy Scout. And that implies that he was even more a stack of books probably at that point. So, well, this is a really interesting exploration. So,
yeah, well, I mean, the way I reconcile that is that a few years ago, they rebranded as Scouting America. And so on the timeline for Kirk, this would have been centuries later. So technically, he would not have been a Boy Scout. So Carol might be correct.
Well, see, that's the thing. After World War III, you don't realize when they brought Boy Scouts back, it was Boy Scouts again. That's what had happened. And here in this universe, it was always Scouting of America.
Yeah. And also after World War III, they have the mutant badge that you can earn as well.
Oh, you know what? That's highly coveted, Chris, and worth a lot of money on the black market. Man, that costs a lot of strips of latinum.
It certainly does. Yeah. The one thing for me here, so for me as a viewer, knowing all of Star Trek inside out, as I do, it was fine to delve into this story in Jim Kirk's mind about Carol and David and connect it with the Wrath of Khan and what we know about Kirk's regrets about not having been able to be there for David when he was growing up and all this stuff. The one thing about it, though, for me in this episode is that it really depends on you knowing all of that history about Kirk, Carol, and David, because all they've really done to set this up at all in this series is they've mentioned Carol. They've mentioned that she's pregnant, but it's basically that. And it's just in just a couple of quick moments. Like there hasn't really been, I don't feel, unless I'm forgetting something, any sufficient setup for the fact that, you know, Kirk has this son and that it would affect him so much in this way. So if you know it, it's fine. I think when you're writing for, especially when you're writing this many decades later, and you potentially have viewers who haven't seen all that history, I think maybe you should set it up a little bit better.
No, that is probably the best point of this, right? That the problem here is absolutely that the writers are pretending like everybody has seen all of Star Trek like we have. And mm-hmm. even though they're quote unquote trying to bring new people in, they're writing an episode that only really makes sense if you've seen TOS and its films.
Yeah, yeah. Because and here you can think like,
you have to at least have seen Star Trek 2 and 3.
Right. Yeah, otherwise it doesn't make any sense at all, right? And there are references in here too of, you know, they'd even go into Star Trek 5 where, you know, Kirk tells Spock and McCoy, "I always knew that I would die alone," right? This is they're like trying to connect all of these dots. And it's fine to do it, but I think they sometimes get a little too clever and kind of tie themselves up and get twisted when they try to make all this stuff fit together.
Are you saying that the motto for the writer's room of Strange New Worlds is, "I'm sure it's fine"?
I'm sure it's fine. They should make t-shirts that they should have those at Star Trek Las Vegas.
There you go.
I'm sure it's fine.
Episode title then, right there for you folks. Yeah.
It has the Star Trek 60th anniversary logo, and then it, above it, it says, "I'm sure it's fine."
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, okay, so let's talk about the other character, which is La'an. And I felt like the basic premise here, this one made a lot of sense to me just because they're building off the reference that they made in the season opener, that she is struggling with feelings that something about her is changing. Some of that augment DNA that's still in her is rising to the surface and is going to impact her in some way. It is interesting that this aired as the second episode of the season, but it's actually, its production number is the fourth episode. So it was shot as the fourth episode and aired as the second. I'm not sure about the writing progression. One thing that stood out to me about the fact that it was shot fourth, Spock's hair is like a little bit longer here. Like you can tell Spock looks a little different in this episode. And if you know that it was shot as the fourth one, maybe that makes a little bit more sense. And the reason I bring it up at all is just, if this is a progression,
Chris, it's just his mop wasn't available. Yeah, he was all backed up, you know, so
Yeah, that's because Mott never learned from Worf how to just show up places when you're needed, no matter what. So,
exactly.
But I bring this up because if they are building off of the seeds they planted in the first episode of the season, I'm kind of wondering about episodes 2 and 3 in the production order and how those fit in with what's going on with La'an right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, you know, Kirk and La'an are the strongest parts of the story here, and La'an is the strongest, right? When it comes to exploration of a character and using this, you know, psychological horror to really get into her mind and what's going wrong with her, or what she feels is going wrong, right, is perfect. I mean, it's just so well done. And we really get to explore the terrifying nature of La'an Unleashed, right? If the augment DNA changed her to this degree, it's terrifying, right? And we've seen that before, right? We've seen it in Star Trek 2. Well, we obviously saw it in Enterprise when we saw the augments. They're terrifying in what they will do and what they can rationalize. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I appreciated us really digging into that with her as a character. And I think the most interesting thing about it is that whatever is here is affecting her more than the other two in that sense of really mm-hmm. heightening. And it almost feels like this story is meant mostly for her. Yeah. And allowing her to, her greatest fear is even more terrifying than these other two's greatest fear, right? Because it, again, Lo'an unleashed is terrifying to the galaxy. And mm-hmm. so I really like that. Now, I think that this is, again, it comes down to the execution. I think where the episode leaves us is not enough of a sense of like what we're supposed to learn from the character yeah. for Lo'an. And I think there's a frustrating nature to this where, you know, Strange New Worlds has wanted to be more episodic. And then you have a storyline like this where, you know, I do want to have like not closure for the story, but I do want to have a better sense of like what I'm supposed to feel about what this meant for the character and why, you mm-hmm. know, and I think there's a little bit of a frustration there. And unfortunately, it gives me PTSD for the Battelle storyline for the previous season where, you know, that was just a train wreck in the sense that it never really made sense because they never really seemed to have figured out what the through line was and the why yeah. behind it with right. her. And so I'm really hoping and, you know, Vulcan chanting and praying that the writers learned from last season so that the storyline that they're building for Lo'an here has real consistency to it. So if, and this is the thing, is that this is clearly an episode that also is predicated on the rest of the season as to how it will age.
Yeah.
Whether right. or not it's actually a good episode is going to depend on where we go, especially for the character of Lo'an by the end of the season and maybe even the series itself. And mm-hmm. that's kind of a tough place to be in some ways. And mm-hmm. so it makes it really hard when I'm watching this episode, I end it and I'm like, I don't even feel like I have enough here to know how to feel, especially for the character that this is supposed to mean the most to. And therefore the episode has such a nebulous existence to me, you know? Mm-hmm. Do you feel the same way at all?
Yeah, pretty much. About the Battelle thing, even if they knew what the through line was, they didn't spend enough time developing it for it to make any sense in the end.
Exactly.
Because they're too 100%. Busy doing weird big swings and crazy episodes for half the season.
They did some weird S last year, okay?
Yeah, right. So, but I also am not sure that they even knew where they were going with that. It really felt like they just had to wrap it up somehow and like, let's make her a statue. But the other thing about that is that Battelle was just a recurring character that they naturally couldn't spend enough time with, really, because she's not part of the crew. Whereas Lo'an is a key part of the crew, very important character. So if they fail to follow this through properly, it really will be a big failure because she's there all the time. You can do whatever you need to do with the character. So we'll see where they go with it. I think we don't get closure, any sense of closure with her on this because it's one step on this journey that she's going to go through throughout the season. But it would be nice if you felt a little more about why, because she's the one who seems most connected to the ship itself and this Rose. And her image would turn into Lo'an, like the ship is talking to Lo'an. Like she has the strongest connection to the story and all the weird stuff that's going on.
Are you saying that this ship is La'an's rosebud?
That's exactly what I'm saying, and okay. That's another T-shirt for us to make. But
yeah, there you go. Because right, isn't that the other thing that, like, this is where it connects with the La'an stories? Like, what the heck is going on in this episode? And the fact don't get any explanation, I mean,
right.
is very counter Star Trek, because Star Trek always has the scientific answer to whatever weird stuff is happening. And so it was very interesting that there truly is this unexplained mystery that seems to accentuate this idea that there is some kind of, like, weird supernatural force out there. Or, I mean, you know, again, last season we saw quote unquote pure evil, and I put that in highly sarcastic quotes. You know, we know that there are aliens like prophets and paw wraiths out there. So is this something like that, where there is a being, kind of, maybe like Artemis, right? To go all the way back to TNG, right? Where it feeds on fear. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, being kind of infected the entire ship, the Griffin, which there were no Griffins or Gryffindors in this episode. So really disappointed in that. I want to know if people that served on the Griffin were known as Gryffindors. I hope so. They had to be. Anyway, but yeah, that's the weird part about this episode. And again, it's the thing that it leaves everything, especially for the character of La'an, completely in the dark for the audience as to what to feel or to think about it.
Yeah. I do think the story needed some kind of explanation. That I feel was one of the biggest failings of the story, is that they seemed to be completely disinterested in explaining anything about what was going on. And, you know, this isn't the X-Files. This is Star Trek. And fans expect there to be some kind of scientific basis for what's happening. It doesn't have to be real science, but there's an attempt to figure out what's happening. And here there's just nothing at all. You know, something weird happens on The Next Generation. It's like, well, transdimensional aliens have tunneled through and they're kidnapping our crew or something like that, right? But here it's just like something crazy happened to the ship. At the beginning, it feels like the naked time and the naked now. Like people are going crazy and they're throwing people out the airlocks, or, you know, weird stuff's happening to the crew because they've been infected with something that's causing them to act this way. But here, I don't know if that's what happened. Really don't know. It just... something happened to this crew and there are ghosts walking around. And, you know, if La'an and Spock and Kirk had thought to bring their Ghostbusters backpacks with them, they could have maybe captured the ghost. But I felt like by the end...
Well, Chris, you forgot that I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's fine.
Do we need an ending that explains anything? Nah, I'm sure it's fine.
No, I'm sure it's fine. Yeah. So it was disappointing that there's just no... Because as a Star Trek fan, you're watching it and you're thinking, okay, well, what's going on? What's going on? You know, they're going to figure it out. But they never do. It's just like, okay, well, everybody's back on the Enterprise now. I'm sure it's fine. It's like... And then I thought at the very end, when you see the Griffin being towed, and then the ghost comes to the window and puts her finger to her lips like, shh. That I thought, like, sort of, it was like the exclamation mark on the fact that we are not going to tell you anything about why Spock and La'an and Kirk were psychologically affected by being trapped on this ship. I guess they're trying to set up a new series called Division 12, or since Paramount seems disinterested in Star Trek TV these days, maybe it's going to be a comic book series called Division 12. It felt like that's the only thing I can think of, is like, we're going to set something else up. But I am confident that that ghost and that ship and this storyline is not going to resurface in the next 8 episodes. It's not like they're teasing us with what's to come. I think it's just like, this looks like it'll be a clever ending.
Well, yeah, come what may. I'm with you. I think that, look, again, it really does come down to execution. And I do think that it comes down to kind of understanding Star Trek itself and how Star Trek tells stories, right? And for 60 years, Star Trek, if it had something like this, it would have given some kind of explanation. Whether or not that made what happened to the characters any better or not, right? Like, it's still messed with their minds and like, but it gave you some sense of what it was that caused the thing. And I think that I don't want to be mean, but I do feel like there's just like a bit of laziness in that. Like, we don't need to explain it. Ooh, isn't it much more mysterious if we don't explain it? And it's like, but that's not Star Trek, right? That's not a Star Trek style story. That might work if you were telling a different type of story in a different type of show, but that's not Star Trek. And so I think there is a real frustration for that. And I think, again, for the overall execution of the episode, it's just so uneven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So uneven.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my take on it, is that, as I said at the beginning, have mixed feelings about it. If you watch it as just a visual creative production, I think it's executed very well. It's well put together, looks great. Of course, the acting is great, as it always is. It's interesting to delve into the minds of these three characters. The degree to which it's interesting depends on the character, but overall, like, the concept of it, I think, was good. And I think it was executed decently, but the complete lack of explanation, the excessive gore, where I felt like at the beginning, they're interested in telling this psychological thriller, that type of horror story.
Thriller! And then, do. Sorry, had to be.
Yeah. It would have been funny if in engineering there were like all these dancers in the background.
Oh, you! I think I even read that they were listening to the Thriller song.
Oh, did they? Really? Okay. Well, I can imagine that watching it.
Everybody's doing the dance, you know? It turns into 13 going on 30.
But then halfway through the episode, it feels like they just leaned too heavily into like the body mutilation horror.
Agreed.
They lost track of where the story would have logically gone from where it started. Like, if you wanted to really delve into the minds of the characters, and they got really into, hey, this is streaming. It's not network TV. It's streaming television. It's 2026. People are a lot more comfortable with graphic visuals these days. So let's just lean into it and do what Star Trek couldn't do in the past, like in The Undiscovered Country, where they had to make the Klingon blood purple, Pepto-Bismol pink, so that they wouldn't get an R rating for the movie. Let's just be as disgusting as we possibly can. So, I have mixed feelings on it. You know, it's an episode that I probably will not go back and watch because, well, there are two reasons. One, it turns me off halfway through because of the gore. And also, it's too long. It's a 59-minute episode where we still don't get any explanation of what's happening.
Yeah.
The longest TOS episodes were like 52 minutes. And in the TNG era, they started in 45 and got down to 42 by the end of Voyager. Here, you got 59 minutes to work with, and you still can't actually dot the I's and cross the T's at the end of the story. So I'm going to give this one just right in the middle. If this were out of 10, I'm just going to give it 5 body bags. How about you?
Wow. Put them in a body bag, Johnny. You know, it's interesting because as we've talked about it, You know, I said earlier that I felt like the episode was above average. And yet, the more that we've talked about, the more I've realized that this actually is a classically average episode in the sense that, like, kind of half the episode is good and the other half of the episode isn't great. And it's that inconsistency which really hurts the episode. And mm-hmm. so I got to give this 2.5 out of 5 severed fingers.
Oh, wow. At least you can still maybe grip something. You still got...
Probably not. But yeah. Good luck.
All right. Yeah, all right. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on the Griffin incident. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group. It's there to continue the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Once in there, you will find a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners and Matthew and me right there. You can also send us email if you like. Go to our website, tfm.fan, that's tfm.fan/contact, and use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up, and that message will mosey its way right on over to us by email. And you can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not figuring out just what part of Spock you're going to snip off next, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing Joe 2. You can also find me here on the network talking about all the franchises we love outside of Star Trek on the 602 Club. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network, 2 shows, Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, and Aggressive Negotiations. John Mills and I are talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out why Laon just stabbed you, where can people find you?
I know. I thought we were on such good terms. And then out of nowhere, like, I'm almost dead. Goodness. Talk about... That's why people don't like augments. But anyway, when I'm recovering from Laon's stabs, you can find me elsewhere on the network with you, of course, doing all the shows we do together. You can find Larry Nemechek and me in the Ready Room from time to time. You can also find me in the back catalog on many, many shows from the past 16 plus years, talking about every corner of the Star Trek universe. You can also find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere, although I'm most active on Blue Sky, but drop me a line wherever you are. Love to hear from you. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything else we're doing on the network, all of our rewatches, the 602 Club, all that stuff going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, how to get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support, so thank you so much to everyone who is helping us now. Well, Matthew, I am so excited because next week, apparently, I get to meet your human best friend.
Well, Chris, let's hit it.